It's time to talk about a farm bill, ladies and gentlemen. If you talk about the last farm bill and you break it down, there are, I don't know anybody that knows the details of it more than Colin Peterson. Whether he's in the majority or the minority, he works so much across the aisle. And it always was under the radar. I mean, it really was. You had this massive piece of legislation that affected every state that spent a lot of money or invested a lot of money. And nobody really tracked it. Nobody really understood it. And maybe that was the brilliance of what Colin Peterson did. But we have him on now. Congressman Peterson, good to have you on. You'll always be Congressman Peterson to me.
Thank you, Joel. Good morning.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the upcoming farm bill. We just went through a debt ceiling debate where supposedly all federal funds are locked in. There's no growth. 0 1 year, 1% the next. What does that mean for the farm bill?
Well, actually, it doesn't mean anything because the farm bill is mandatory spending, which is not something they dealt with in this debt limit bill. So the appropriation caps that they put in this bill do not affect the farm bill per se. Now, there are some authorizations that are in the farm bill, but they take an appropriation, so they could be affected. But, you know, most the funding is guaranteed mandatory spending. So the big issue, the big news about this debt ceiling situation is that they dealt with the work requirements in the debt ceiling. And all of the four corners of the Ag Committee in the House and the Senate said that this is going to take the work requirements off the table. That is a huge, huge burden that's been lifted off the farm bill, because that's what's killed the farm bill the last few times. There have been these work requirements. So I think that increased the likelihood of a farm bill, you know, maybe 100%, maybe 1,000%. From what it was. Now, there's still some issues. Glenn Thompson says, well, he'd still like to look at the waivers, so forth. But that hasn't been as contentious an issue as the work requirements have. So getting that off the table, I think, really increases the odds of them being able to get farm bill yet this year.
So there was always talk about extension of the old farm bill. Is it a good thing to get the farm bill done? Because the current farm bill hasn't been bad for farmers.
No, for the Midwest, I would say that we can live with the current law without too much problem. For the Southerners, that's not so much the case because rice and peanuts, I think, both need a increase in reference prices. Some of the other commodities, I think, would like an increase. But, you know, like corn and soybeans, if they did increase the reference price, they wouldn't kick in the first 5 years of the farm bill anyway. So we're getting scored for some money that's not going to do anything. So I think it depends on what part of the country you're in, what kind of commodities you raise, and so forth, about how important getting a farm bill through is to you. And, you know, like I've been telling some of the guys here in the Midwest, if we didn't get a bill, it's not the end of the world for us. But rice, for example, has not had an increase in their prices. We've had significant increases in prices of corn, soybeans, and wheat. They've been flat. So we did increase their reference price last time, the 18 bill. But they're still in a position now that the reference price is probably $1.50, $2 below the cost of production. So it kind of depends on where you're at, but like I say, I think getting this whole work requirement thing off of the table is going to be a huge positive for getting this thing done.
You know, but what you just described to me is when you're sitting there with $14 soybeans, it shouldn't be. I mean, it shouldn't trigger, you know, and so, you know, I'm not trying to bash a farmer as much as what I'm trying to say that's pure economics. I mean, that being in the farm bill to me is a good thing. And what I'm making reference to is you look at COVID and post COVID. I had farmer friends and more than come on one hand that told me they didn't know what some of the checks were that they got sent in the beginning.
I had the same thing, Joel. I had people coming up to me and said, what are all these checks I'm getting? Why am I keep getting these checks, you know? I said, well, President Trump's trying to be your friend. I said, that's what's going on. But, you know, so the target where they reference price for soybeans is $8.40, you know, and so the price has been $14. It's because it's been down to 12 something. But you can see it's not going to kick in anytime soon. Corn, is the reference price has been $3.70, I believe. And so, again, it's way below what the market price is. You know, you've got people out there saying they want an increase in reference price. Well, even amongst the corn growers and soybean growers are saying that in the Midwest. And I question that because a 10% increase in the reference price of all commodities costs $20 billion. And as I said, for corn and soybeans, you raise them 10%, you're talking around $4 for corn and, you know, maybe nine something for soybeans. They're not going to kick in anyway. If they do, we've got serious other problems. So, as I said, I've been telling, you know, Stabenow and others, I've been out in D.C. giving them advice that what we need to do is we need to split off the southern crops from the northern crops and try to figure out a way that we can take care of their interests and do something to help our interests, which is, I think, the money's better spent myself in crop insurance and trying to get at the issues that we've had with all these ad hoc disasters. But, you know, it's going to be up to Congress to figure that out.
I wasn't just saying this because I consider you a friend and I was bragging. I said it because it's true. You were able to bring a bipartisanship to that ag committee, both as chairman and as ranking minority member. Is it still that way? You know, are people still coming to that committee? Because there's a lot of urban people on the ag committee right now. There are a lot of rural people, for example, Michelle Fischbach, that ran away from the ag committee, that didn't understand ag. And so, you know, how does the committee make up as we go into a farm bill, structuring a farm bill? How does it look going in?
Well, that's why I said that this work requirement thing being taken off the table is so important, because you do have a lot of urban members and their interest is in nutrition and in SNAP and so forth. And so that being taken off the table, I think, helps them get what they need in a farm bill, and it makes it easier for them, for people to work with them. So I've been out in D.C. working with both sides of the aisle. I've been Senator Stabenow, I've had a number of meetings with her, Glenn Thompson, trying to be helpful in whatever way I can to try and get these two sides together. And I think, frankly, it's working pretty well. I mean, they are getting along well with each other. They're talking to each other. Some of these issues are going to be the sticking point, and that the reference price will be one of those, you know, that they've got to get around. But I think they can figure that out. And so, you know, I'm going to do what I can to be helpful. We've been weighing in. We've been supporting members of the committee on both sides of the aisle to try to help get this thing where it needs to be. And I'm hopeful. I think right now I'm hearing good things for everybody. Everybody's saying the right things, and everybody's focused on getting this done, being bipartisan. So unless something changes, I think we've got a good shot.
So, again, going back to a number of my friends, it isn't uncommon to have them say that individuals on SNAP, on food stamps, they don't get up in the morning and they don't work. And that's the problem, that they should work. And then I point out that one of the reasons that we're able to get good farm bills, in my opinion, is because SNAP is part of it. And so, I number one, I need your take. Number two, why did you and others that crafted these farm bills year after year, every 5 years, I should say, why did you include SNAP in it? Why didn't you separate out those two things like Senator Cramer actually pushed for once?
Well, because there wouldn't be a farm bill. There are not enough rural people, people with farm districts left in Congress to pass a farm bill that would work for production agriculture with just those votes. You've got to have these other folks involved, and that's on both sides of the aisle. So this idea that somehow or another you're going to separate them is, if you want to make sure there's never another farm bill, that's the way to do it, because it just will not happen unless you figure out a way to do that. Again, that's why it's important to take these work requirements off this table. So the work requirements, by the way, have been there since 96. I was in the room with Bill Clinton and the Blue Dogs when we did that back in 96. We put work requirements not only on food stamps, but we put them on welfare. And in order to get it through the Senate, we had to give waiver authority to the administration and to governors and so forth that they can apply for waivers from these work requirements. And that has been the issue, is that, you know, a lot of these states have been exempted completely. California, Illinois, New York were completely exempted from these work requirements, even though they're in the law. And so, you know, it's been a kind of a argument that's been going on that's not really factual. And getting it off the table is going to be very helpful. But without nutrition, there's not going to be a farm bill. And this idea that somehow or another you're going to eliminate it. And, you know, and most people that can work and that have the ability and, you know, that are already working, that's not the issue. The issue is, you know, you've got a lot of folks that have got other problems, that are disabled and so forth, that can't really work. So it's a complex situation, and it's good to have it off the table.
Previously, we had an economist on, and he was talking about, you know, some of the hypocrisies in the economy and issues like that. And his take on the debt ceiling is we shouldn't even be debating a debt ceiling. We should just be debating a budget. And so to make the argument that we're going to pay our bills, you know, is absolutely ridiculous. When we come back, I'd love your take on that. Colin Peterson, ladies and gentlemen, I want to hear what he thinks about the agreement that was made on this debt ceiling. Former United States Congressman Colin Peterson is our guest, always willing to give us some time, talk about economics, talk about legislation. And one of the things I was really anxious to talk to him about is the debt ceiling. You know, the bill that passed the House yesterday will certainly pass the Senate coming up. Riaz Aziz, who we had on earlier from Concordia College, said this whole debate is ridiculous. We shouldn't be debating the debt ceiling, that it's political by its very nature. What I'm curious about, Colin, is two things. Number one, what you think about what Riaz said. Number two, what you think about the agreement itself.
Well, I think I somewhat agree with him, because it's kind of a false argument. We have spent the money. You know, the Congress has made the appropriations. They've actually spent the money. And so all they're doing is it's an arbitrary number that's been put in there, allowing them to actually pay the bills that they've already agreed to pay. So it gives opportunity for demagogues to go out there and demagogue this on both sides of the aisle. I don't know what good that does. It helps the cable news networks so they can whip this up into a frenzy, but I'm not sure it does much good for anything else. In terms of the agreement, you know, I think it's a decent agreement. The issue is going to be what happens now. For example, you know, as I said, the Farm Bill is mandatory spending, as is Social Security, as is a lot, Medicare, a lot of the other parts of the budget are mandatory spending. They're not subject to the appropriation process. This bill only affected, in terms of limiting spending, it only affected the appropriation part of the process. And it's going to put a limitation, I think, to 1% or minus 1% or whatever it is on that part of it. That's only about 10% of the budget. So it's not a huge thing. What's going to be interesting is what happens. So, for example, the mandatory stuff was off the table, including the Farm Bill. So you got a lot of Republicans and some Democrats in Congress that are wanting to get extra money into the Farm Bill, into the mandatory spending, because they want to spend more money on reference prices and crop insurance and whatever else it is. I think it's going to be very difficult for them to be able to accomplish that. I don't know how they're going to get these right-wingers in the House to go along with giving them extra money, given what we just went through. But they're counting on that in order to get this Farm Bill done. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out, number one. Number two, these limitations that were put on the appropriation process, they sound good. But again, you've got people trying to get additional money into the appropriation process, some of it being agriculture money, significantly above this 1%. So what happens when the rubber meets the road? Are they going to abide by that, or are they going to figure out a way around it? I think the probably the most likely outcome is they're not going to stick to those numbers. They're going to find some excuse or some way to get around it. So I think the whole thing is create a lot of theater, give these folks that like to be on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and so forth to go on there and make a lot of noise, but it's not really doing any good for the country that I can see.
So, you know, and maybe this is the norm, maybe this is the timing, but from the political side, one of the things that jumped out at me was we're not going to have this debate again until post 2004 or 2024 election. And you know, I thought the Republicans would want this in front of the public again prior to the presidential election. I got 1 minute left. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, I don't know that that's true. I think they've figured out that this is actually not helping them. It's making them look kind of ridiculous in some of these ways. So I think they decided to get it off the table, move it past the election, which I think is a good thing for the country. The politics, you know, I think the public is smarter than the politicians give them credit for. They've figured this out. They know that this is a lot of posturing by both sides. And, you know, you look at this bill, the right wing of the Republicans and the left wing of the Democrats are the ones that oppose this bill. That probably tells you they got to a pretty good place.
Yeah, it does. It does. I just wrote about that on my blog. So thank you, Congressman. Always good to talk to you.
Thank you, Joel.
You bet. Congressman Colin Peterson.